Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Peyton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, this is going to be a fantastic segment. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, author of Live Large, The Achiever's Guide to What's Next, Miss Elizabeth Crook. How are you, sunshine?
I am fantastic. Thank you.
Well, Elizabeth, before we get into talking about your book, can you share a little bit about your backstory? What have you been up to?
Sure. For the past over 20 years, I have worked with CEOs, business owners, entrepreneurs to help them grow their bottom line. And I say more satisfaction, but really have more fun. Growing a business can be a grind. And I think when companies are smart and act strategically and make better choices, then not only are they more successful, but they just have a greater sense of satisfaction as well as their employees. So people used to come to me in spite of the fact that I worked with companies, and they would say, everybody says that you're good at figuring things out. And indeed I am. That's one of my talents, is seeing themes and patterns. And as people came to me and I helped them plan next moves in their career, I developed a process that was very, very powerful. And finally, a mentor and friend of mine just said, will you just go on and write the darn book? So I have been in different business functions, in business development, and lived in the U.S., lived in New York, lived in South America, and I'm a mother and now a grandmother, and I love to hike and read, and turns out I'm a writer as well.
Who knew, right? Now, when you were, going from the stage of, you know what, I think I'll write the book, to the actual writing of the book, how was that process for you?
Well, it was interesting because I wasn't writing about the thing that I did every day, but one of the things I found is once I wrote the book, or once I began to have this process for personal planning, I began to use it with all of my CEOs. And it became very powerful for them. And it also allowed me to develop a whole nother set of stories. But the writing was really writing stories first, and then based on the process, and then sort of putting those together and creating an arc. I was happy and fortunate to meet a very fine development editor, and she helped me structure the arc of the book. And then there are all the pieces and parts. You know, you're going to use a regular traditional publisher, a non-traditional publisher, you're going to self-publish, what about distribution? How do you want to handle all of those pieces? And so I went through a presentation on all of those parts. So that takes a while, and the tuition is not very cheap either.
Now, in the book, you talk about limiting beliefs. Is that something you see with your clients that you saw over time, that that's a common denominator?
You know, Lee, I see it in the mirror every day, but I certainly see it in we all have them. And yet we don't have any good ways to deal with them. Based on a whole lot of experience, and I sometimes laugh and say I've had 5,000 years of therapy, but I think that our ability to identify what is holding us back is as important as identifying the direction that we're going, because many times those beliefs keep us from even imagining all the things that we could be or might be. I had a woman, she was probably in her early 50s. She came to me. She'd been very successful in her career in business-to-business selling. And she said in a very low voice, I don't have a college degree. So her belief was that since she didn't have a college degree, she couldn't make any change. She had to stay exactly where she was. Now, that may have been true when she was 21 years old, but now she had 30 years of experience in developing high-level relationships in corporate settings, but she had this belief that because she didn't have a college degree, she couldn't be successful in a next venture.
And then
that's just one example of a limiting belief.
And how was that kind of demonstrating for herself, like in a day-to-day basis? Like, was that preventing her from doing some things?
Yeah, she wanted to leave her industry. She was in an industry that is at a sunset point, something that we'll see more and more in many industries as technology replaces different parts, so that where companies might find value. So, for example, she was in the printing industry, and that whole business has changed. Banking has changed. Publishing has changed. So many people have. How think about the taxi cab industry and Uber. Now, there are many things when your industry is changing dramatically. The old roles that existed in the past are not going to exist in the future. If you believe that through lack of education on her part, that she didn't have any opportunities outside of an industry that she knew. But when we were able to look at her know-hows, the processes that she knew how to develop relationships. She knew how to manage an account. She knew how to coordinate between an operations piece and a sales piece. She could do that in any industry. And once she was able to see all of the experience that she truly had, it opened up lots of possibilities for her.
Now, you mentioned that sometimes you have to take a look at this, these limiting beliefs before you kind of can figure out how you want your story to end or at least proceed. How important is knowing what's important to you and your why of doing things?
I think it's very important. Early in the book, I have people go through, well, we call them explorations because most of us don't like to exercise, so I didn't want to call them exercises because that sounds like it's going to be painful.
It sounds like work.
Explorations
right.
are really about deep awareness about who we are, and I like to believe not only deep awareness about who we are, but also compassion for who we are. So when we look at where we've been, we can see themes and patterns. Some of those themes and patterns will serve us well going forward. Some of them may not. So I wanted to give readers a way of saying, does this still work? It's not unlike cleaning out your closet. Do you have, most women will have what we call the fat section of the closet and the skinny section of the closet.
I don't have that. I just have a fat section.
You don't have that? Well, I congratulate you. Or things that we simply don't wear anymore. We've outgrown or the style has changed. And so when we go back and look at where we were, we can say, you know, I don't want to use this anymore. This doesn't serve me anymore. And we can say, so I'm going to put that to one side. I'm going to make space, as it were, to grow and in a different direction. And some of those are attitudes and beliefs. And I gave you the example of the woman in college. There was a man I worked with who had developed a revolutionary way of restructuring his industry. He had tried time and time again to get attention for his ideas, but he was, frankly, in our common language, a nerd. He was brilliant, but he just never wanted to partner with people who could connect him with investors, who could connect him with other industries and other opportunities. And he said, you know, I don't like connecting with people who are the in crowd. And I said, so what's that about? And he said, well, my father did a business deal with sort of those insider types, and he got completely screwed. He said, I'm never going to let that happen to me. So he had taken his father's experience, applied it to himself, and he had created a limit because the way he defined what was possible absolutely eliminated the possibility of his ever connecting with people who could actually help him get the success that he so desperately longed for and that, frankly, his idea deserved.
Now, when you're working with somebody like that and they have a goal of some level of success and you help them define what that is going to look like in the future, and they come to you with something a limiting belief like this, and they're taking this baggage from their youth along for the ride, you know, decades later, how do you kind of open their eyes that they're doing that in a way that they, the light bulb goes off and they get it?
Well, most of us pay more attention to what we say to ourselves than what anybody else says. So it's not about my telling them. It's about my giving them the questions and the framework to ask themselves those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember that those old V8 juice ads where it shows the guy slapping his head saying, gee, I could have had a V8?
Yes.
And so as people move through these explorations, they have that, gee, I could do this. And it's when we discover it ourselves, not because I say, because they have the answers. So the role of the book and the role of the explorations, or the role when I'm working with somebody one-on-one, is to say, so when you limit those, what are some of the benefits, or what are some of the risks that happen when you do that? And then they begin to talk about it, and they develop that awareness through that conversation with themselves.
And the book,
so
is,
I'm not just telling them, I'm giving them explorations. There are many books that have great advice, but they don't help you figure out your answers for you. And that was my goal in Live Large.
And this book is, like you said, it's not just the anecdotes and stories. There's actually work to be done, or you're calling them explorations, where there you put pen to paper and really kind of take action and think things through and do activities that are going to help expand your thinking.
Absolutely. And one of the things, because I didn't want to have a great big workbook like a first grade workbook we used to have. And so on the website, elizabethvcrook.com, people can download the explorations, and they can either work with them through a fillable PDF file, or they can print them out if they'd rather handwrite in them. I don't want people to feel constricted to write tiny things in a chart in a book.
And the goal for the reader you have is to actually develop a plan, you know, for living large. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there'll be some people who will say, it's a tool first for self-awareness, and then second for saying, given this new awareness that I have, what are the characteristics or qualities of where I really want to be? It also has helped me identify the skills and talents and what I call the know-whats and the know-hows, and then say, given all of that, what are some options for me? And I draw them in, have them draw them in clouds and bubbles, because to put them in boxes makes it seem too definite at that stage. And so once we kind of generate all these possibilities, then we look at them and say, what are the benefits or the risks of each one? And then we come down, because that's really a head thing, and then we come down to the gut, which is what I call the yippee index, and we say, which one of these options makes me want to say, yippee, wow, I really want to do that. Because even if something has lots of benefits to it, if we're not very excited about it, then we probably shouldn't be doing it.
Now, do you find that most people just don't dream large enough?
Yes. I think that that's true, that they don't think of themselves in all of their bigness. And that's in some ways what led me to the title of Live Large. Live Large is when we are living our life from our strengths and from our talents, as opposed to living within the confines and restrictions that we place on ourselves.
Do you have any advice for parents, maybe with children, like how to help them not have these limiting beliefs and to kind of dream bigger?
Oh boy, that's a really good question. I think that regardless of how, quote, good or not good our parents are, that as young learners, whether it's from parents or teachers or coaches, that there will be times when we get a piece of advice that fit at the time, but we overgeneralize it. So there was a fairy story, years ago that my grandmother read to me. It was about the little boy whose grandmother said, take the cow to market and sell it and buy some cheese and bring it back. Well, the little boy came and he didn't, the cow got lost on the way home. And the grandmother said, oh, stupid boy, don't you know you tie a rope around the cow and pull it behind you? So the next day, the grandmother asked him to go into market and buy some cheese. So the boy tied a rope around the cheese and dragged it home. And the grandmother said, oh, stupid boy, don't you know that you take the cheese and you wrap it in leaves and put it under your hat? So the next day, she sent him to get a chicken, and so on. So he was always misapplying the advice. And I think that what can be crippling is that when parents say something, don't do this or don't do that, that the child takes it as always and never, instead of saying, in this kind of situation, do this. So I think that as parents, then our opportunity is to help children say, in this situation, we want to be kind to strangers, but in that situation, you don't want to get in the car with a stranger. So it's breaking up the always and never.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in the book, you mentioned the triple J's. Can you explain those?
Yes. We always have that voice in the head. Just in fact, some of those things I was saying would be the triple J. And the triple J is a voice that, in effect, says, you can't do this. What makes you think you're entitled to do this? Don't get too big for your britches. You're in Atlanta, so I'm sure you that's sort of a Southern expression, don't get too big for your britches. And when we internalize that voice, it becomes the triple J, and the triple J stands for the jury, judge, and jailer. And the jury gives a verdict. The judge passes a sentence, and the jailer locks us up. So it's a shorthand way of referring to that voice in our heads that says, you can't, you shouldn't, you mustn't, you're not able. And the more we can identify that as just that voice that judges us, then the more we can choose to say, well, now, wait a minute. There's all this other stuff. There's all this other evidence that suggests what you're saying is not always true. And we'll probably never get rid of that voice, but we can, when we can learn to say, yes, I hear you, but this situation is different, or I'm different, then it opens up our options for action.
Now, this book is, I guess your career has been around kind of coaching executives, but this book seems broader than that. This is a book for pretty much anybody that wants to kind of dream bigger and live a larger life. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Now,
what struck me, oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, you go.
Well, what struck me was that even people who all of us would judge as being successful, in other words, these were people who knew how to get things done, even those people had many of the same demons that all the rest of us have. They had limiting beliefs and behaviors that kept them stuck. They longed for a way to take their skills, their experience, their talents, their resources, and feel more, not only more satisfied, but more integrated. So many times we live in this is my work and this is my life. And I think to the extent that we can integrate and be clear about what our bigger picture is and how those different parts of ourselves fit together, we don't feel as fragmented. And the more we can spend our time and energy doing things that are truly energizing to us and being clear about what those are versus the things that are depleting for us, then we can live larger. And this is not just a problem of executives. It's a problem of a lot of people because we're so busy doing what we think we must do that we fail to realize what we can do.
And is that a disconnect for a lot of people that in their mind, maybe living larger is a number, like a financial goal, when maybe you're talking about something that's even bigger, that's a life with more meaning?
Yes. I think in our culture, we have certainly seen people who appear to have it all, but yet don't seem happy. We see drug overdoses, we see suicides, we see all kinds of self-destructive behavior. And when we see it, when someone has had that level of success, it always makes me say, what happened? They appeared to have everything, but obviously they didn't. And so I think that the book is really to help us say, what would a fulfilling life look like for me, as opposed to saying buying society or the media's version of what that should look like. Because if we actually get what, you know, the media tells us that would make us, would be successful, and we get there and it's not what we want, where do we go from there?
Right.
What do we do?
Now, before we wrap, do you mind kind of sharing with our listeners maybe some specific things a person can do to discover their unique talents? Because I think a lot of time people, they think they're something, but maybe there's something more to them than what they can see, mm-hmm. or maybe what their parents told them or their friends tell them.
Mm-hmm. I think there are two exercises or explorations that I use in combination. One is, I have them sort of with post-it notes, sit down and just write down the activities that they do, you know, on a regular basis, and then separate those things into the things that are energizing for them and the things that are depleting. What are the things that, even though you're working hard, you know, you just get revved up doing it? It's like, I love leading planning retreats. I love working with clients, but don't make me figure out this new software program or figure out this glitch. That's the step one. The other step is to look at the contents you know about, but also the processes. Do you know how to, for example, organize people in tasks? Do you know how to interview people, which you clearly do? Do you know how to manage projects? Do you know how to create a vision and take it to completion? What are those things that you know how to do? And so when you take what you know how to do and you match that with what's energizing, your talents probably lie in that overlap. It at least begins to give you a place. And what your talent is, it's probably something that's easy for you and you may not think is very special.
Elizabeth,
when I was...
Go right ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted. This is Stone. I just wanted to get on and say hi real quick, and I just couldn't stand it, and I interrupted you, so you go right ahead.
Okay. My talent is seeing themes and patterns and then reflecting that back to groups. But many years ago, I was invited to be part of a group of the very intellectual group of therapists and writers when I lived overseas. And after one particular session, I went back and was talking to my therapist. And she said, I noticed that whenever you spoke, you always brought an interesting perspective, but you preceded everything you said with, I'm probably wrong, but. So I had decided that there were only two possibilities. Either everybody saw what I saw, or I was wrong. Because seeing the themes and the patterns and being able to synthesize that is a gift I have, but it was so easy for me, I didn't think of it as anything special. So it took me not just that conversation, but others to finally say, wow, I guess this really is a talent. And we all have those places.
Well, it must be incredibly rewarding work to help people find those places. You must just absolutely love what you do.
I do love what I do because it frees people. And that's what living large is all about. It's living in your whole house, as it were. Suppose you opened a door and you said, oh my gosh, we got three more rooms back there. That's what the work is about. People get to discover more rooms in their house. In fact, I wrote a blog post that goes up today, elizabethbcrook.com, about just that. That's what living large is, living in your whole house, living, being all of who you are.
What a great way to wrap, and what a great mental picture of opening up the whole house. This has been the most insightful, inspiring. This is the best 25-minute workshop I've ever been to. And Elizabeth, I'm kind of long in the tooth. I've been to a few workshops in my time.
I've got long teeth too.
All right, let's make sure let's make sure that our listeners know where to go to get their hands on this book and or have a substantive conversation with you or someone on your team. What's the best way? Website, email, phone, whatever you feel like is appropriate.
It's elizabethbcrook.com. They can sign up and get regular communication. They can buy the book, and they can be directly in touch with us. They can go to one of their favorite online bookstores, or they can go to a bricks and mortar store.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show this afternoon. Thank you so much, and we're going to do this again.
Thanks,
Stone. You are more than welcome.
I'd love that.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon, Elizabeth Crook, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.